The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
When Nicole Sandler sits down to do her show, she's the producer, booking the guests, pulling the audio, planning the show, the engineer, running the controls, troubleshooting any problems, playing the sounds, calling the guests, and she's the webmaster, writing the blog, posting the podcast, maintaining the website, not to mention the host, interviewing the guests, explaining the issues, giving opinions, and calling out the bad guys. And then you get the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
Welcome to Friday Eve. It's easier when you think of it in those terms, right? We still have one more day to wake up and, you know, go through the grind. But then the weekend is here. And I'm here to tell you that CBD really does work for pain relief. Yeah, the regular just CBD oil. Now, I can't attest to the CBD oil made from hemp that you can buy, you know, in your local head shop or drugstore, actually. But the medical grade CBD made from actual cannabis really does work. David uses it because he's, you know, he's old and rickety. And he's got a lot of aches and pains. And so he tends to get those tinctures and use them. And I hadn't until I cracked a couple of ribs. Well, the last couple of nights, he's made me up these capsules of the CBD, and it's really helped. And then this morning, I awoke. I was up way too early. But anyway, I decided, well, I'm going to make myself up a couple of these capsules. But apparently, I took the drops from the wrong bottle. So this morning, you know, every morning I get up early, I read all the news sources. I got to subscribe to a bunch of newsletters and different sources, and I gather together all the information and I put together my What's Newscast that I run at the end of this show. So if you get the podcast, you get What's News too. It also goes out as its own podcast, and it runs, the 6-minute version of it runs throughout the day on the Progressive Voices Network. And I do that usually first thing in the morning. And some days I work faster than others. Well, today, you know, I'm just like, every time I get started on it, I get distracted by something. And I realized it was already like 11 o'clock and I wasn't done with What's News yet. And then I realized I was a little buzzed. And then I realized I took the drops from the wrong tincture bottle. So instead of straight CBD, I got the heavy-duty THC stuff. So no wonder it took me a while to get it together today. So when you hear What's News, and I will, again, play today's at the end of the show, you'll hear I don't sound like my usual self. Well, you know, it's been at many hours now, and I'm totally fine. You know, as much as I have smoked pot through the years, one thing I don't ever do is partake before I have to do a show. I will generally have something standing by. So the minute I'm done, I will, just to take the edge off a little bit. But I don't ever in the day before I go on the air, just because it messes with my mind. And I have a hard enough time speaking sometimes, let alone what being impaired. But this morning, oh boy, I was. So when you hear What's News, if it sounds a little different, that's why. Anyway, all's good. All's well. And it helped with the pain. That said, don't ever fracture any ribs if you can help it. It's not fun. All right. So a lot happened since we last spoke. Now, yesterday, in the middle of the show, there was breaking news that I shared with you as we were going off the air. And that breaking news really was, it was a surprise for us. But we've since learned it was a surprise for virtually everybody. Everybody in Congress, nobody knew this was happening. But Joe Manchin apparently didn't like all the criticism he was taking when he derailed the last go-round in trying to get some kind of a spending bill together, a reconciliation package for the Democrats to help President Biden's agenda to help the nation, to help people recover from the insanity of the last, 6 years, right? And so what we heard yesterday was that Manchin and Chuck Schumer struck a deal, and they came up with it's under $1 trillion. It would cover some healthcare issues, like allowing Medicare to negotiate for drugs. It could. Extending the Affordable Care Act subsidies that were increased during COVID that were set to expire by the end of this year, which would have really sucked. And even some climate change legislation, like the biggest tranche of money ever set aside to help mitigate the causes and effects of climate change. Oh, and of course, King Joe Manchin's priority, which was deficit reduction, which is not what we need right now, but okay, to get the other stuff. All right, so we got the very basics last night, and then more holes were filled in. So in a minute, I'll tell you exactly what we've learned about this bill and what it includes. And I'll tell you something, just when we thought it was done, I thought Joe Manchin basically said, screw you to the party, to everybody else. But according to David Dayen at the American Prospect, and I tried to get him on today, he was just too busy, and I understand. He's got a great piece. I'll link to it from the blog where I post today's show so you can read it. But he explains, it's the most comprehensive write-up of what transpired here that I found. And Dayen makes a very interesting observation. 5 years ago today, that was when John McCain went onto the Senate floor and did the big thumbs down to the Republican repeal of Obamacare, July 28th. Okay, 5 years ago, right? 1 year ago today, July 28th, 2021, Chuck Schumer and Joe Manchin signed a secret deal to deliver a $1.5 trillion reconciliation bill. That would include, quote, no additional handouts or transfer payments on any health or family care policies. You know, basically, it was the $1.5 trillion deal that Manchin then, pulled out of. But that was a year ago today. And then he writes, for 364 days, Manchin went back and forth on pretty much all of these provisions, rejecting the bill outright, then crawling back to the table, going into bargaining with Schumer, leaving that bargaining, and coming back again. And 1 year to the day later, here we are, we have a bill called the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022, which includes everything in the previous paragraph that I neglected to fully read to you, and a lot more on energy and climate, plus the Affordable Care Act insurance exchange subsidies and prescription drug price reforms that we knew about. He said, but overall, the bill spends $433 billion, a little over $1 trillion less than the original top line, and much of that revenue will go to deficit reduction. But again, I'll say something is better than nothing, and the Democrats really need something and something good to take into the midterms. So, they go out on break next week. For the month of August. Yes, we are coming up on August. I know, as unbelievable as that sounds. And, between inflation and the rising interest rates, that happened yesterday too. The Fed jacked the interest rates up by 0.75 percentage point. And I just have to share this with you. Now, it's in What's News today, but I didn't comment on it. But I have to see if you pick it out too. So Jay Powell, chairman of the Fed, makes a little statement after he announces this 0.75 percentage point hike. Okay, now just listen to this quote here.
Today's increase is in the target range is the second 75 basis point increase in as many meetings.
Okay.
While another unusually large increase could be appropriate at our next meeting.
Yeah.
That is a decision that will depend on the data we get between now and then.
Okay, understood.
We will continue to make our decisions meeting by meeting.
Meeting by
and
meeting.
Communicating and communicate our thinking as clearly as possible.
It's that last sentence. Boy, he had a really hard time spitting that out. And what he was saying is, we will continue to make our decisions meeting by meeting and be very clear in what we're trying to communicate with you. But saying it in the most unclear, uncommunicative manner. Listen to this sentence again.
We will continue to make our decisions meeting by meeting and communicating and communicate our thinking as clearly as possible.
As clearly as possible. Maybe it's just me. I found that truly funny. I mean, sad funny, but funny nonetheless. And communicate it as what?
We will continue to make our decisions meeting by meeting.
Meeting by
and
meeting.
Communicating and communicate our thinking as clearly as possible.
Easy for him to say. Or not. All right. Sorry. I took too much pleasure in that. It wasn't funny, but it was, if you know what I mean. All right. So let me tell you what is in this Inflation Reduction Act of 2022. Okay, so it has, let's see, extending the subsidies that make insurance affordable in the Affordable Care Act and extending it for 3 years, which takes it past the end of Joe Biden's first term, which is really important, right? That combined with, and again, I'm sharing this analysis from David Dayan at the American Prospect. He said, combined with an exceedingly modest drug price reform that still yields $288 billion in Medicare savings and more for individual seniors. So that's a good thing. And then he added, the Democrats should find a way to get insulin back into the mix rather than leaving it out so a bipartisan bill can fail. Good advice. Put insulin back in there. Then there are tax measures. And this is where I worry about Kyrsten Sinema. Because, you know, she hasn't weighed in on this yet. But David Dayan writes, the tax measures are simple. He says there's a corporate alternative minimum tax for companies with more than $1 billion in annual profit. He said it's loosely based on Elizabeth Warren's book profits tax from the 2020 campaign, which derived profit from financial statements to investors, not deduction-heavy tax filings. However, he writes, it seems like some credits will be able to count against profits, meaning more savings for corporations. I don't know what any of that means. What I do know is it's supposed to come up with a flat 15% minimum tax for these big corporations with more than $1 billion in annual earnings. That sounds pretty good. He said there's also an $80 billion investment in the IRS that the Congressional Budget Office believes will raise $124 billion in revenue on net. He said the Biden administration thinks it will be much higher. And a tweak, not a closure, of the carried interest loophole. Again, I start talking about these things like carried interest loopholes, and I'm not quite sure what it all means. But I do know that that's something that Kyrsten Sinema opposed. Now, Kyrsten Sinema did not know that these negotiations were going on, and she was, like most other people in D.C., caught unawares. And so she has not yet weighed in. And as I said on Twitter last night, watch Kyrsten Sinema fuck this whole thing up. Let's hope she doesn't. I'm putting out, you know, positive energy to the universe. Let's say a couple more things. There's also a nice $15 million pilot program to study a direct e-file tax return system administered by the government instead of private tax repairers like Intuit. The administration has a keen interest in that one. And as for the climate and energy measures, you'll hear a lot that this is the largest climate action taken by the U.S. government in history. Those statements often tell you nothing because it's compared to what scenario? Because they've not put any money into climate. But, Dayan writes, on its own terms, this narrows energy investment from $550 billion in the initial Build Back Better Act to $369 billion, though a climate bank and climate accelerator could allow for another $290 billion in investments. All right. Hold on one second, caller. In investments from the private sector, this is mostly achieved through scaling back the credits and all that. Okay. So I'm going to answer this call, but I may hang up on it in a minute because it's coming from New Mexico and we have a troll in New Mexico. Is this the troll? Is this Pat? Is this Pat?
No.
Who is this? No. Who is this?
This is David. David, I'm on your chat.
Hi, David.
The thing is that Kirsten Sinema, hi, I'll do this real quick.
Okay.
Kirsten Sinema has some liability here. You know, TSMC is a $25 billion plant, okay, being built in Phoenix. And also, what do you call it? Intel in Arizona, it wants these $55-58 billion subsidies so that they can continue to build in America. So that, I mean, Doe could say, hey, you know, no more subsidies.
Yeah.
Your projects are done.
Well,
okay?
Now you're saying
it's not like we don't have any. You understand what I'm saying?
No. Are you talking about the tech? Because that was a different bill.
No, USA Chips Act.
USA Chips Act. Right, that's a different bill. That's not this one. The USA Chips Act, by the way, passed the Senate.
But it's not like, I understand that, but it's not like you know, we don't have any, you know, hey, Kirsten, you're getting this out of us, you know. You understand what I mean? A deal.
No.
Anyway, I'll let you go.
Okay. Well, thank you for the call. Now, I think I know what you're saying. Like, Kirsten Sinema, but we're conflating two things. So what happened is, yesterday, the Senate passed this USA Chips Act. This is to build up microchip manufacturing here in the United States, right? Which was necessary. That's why the cost of cars has skyrocketed. That's why part of the whole supply chain slowdown is because there's a backlog on these microchips. So this is a bill to get that jump started. Some people are criticizing it because, look, the tech industry has plenty of money. They really didn't need $280 billion. But what happened was the Senate passed that yesterday, right? And just mere hours later, Chuck Schumer and Joe Manchin announced this deal that they made. And the Senate Republicans are pissed off because they've been had. Because the only reason they went and joined in on this bill was because they thought any chance of the Democrats putting together a reconciliation spending bill was dead in the water. And again, nobody knew that Manchin and Schumer were doing this. And the few who did kept it quiet. So mere hours after 17 Senate Republicans voted with all the Democrats and passed the CHIPS Act in the Senate, then they announced this new reconciliation package, the Infrastructure Relief Act of 2022. Well, today, the CHIPS Act was supposed to go to the House, and all of a sudden, Republicans are whipping against it, telling their members, do not vote for this because they want to retaliate against the Democrats for outmaneuvering them politically. It's hysterical. Well, it didn't work because they did vote on it today in the House, and 24 Republicans voted with all the Democrats except one who voted present, go figure, to pass it. So that bill goes to the president's desk, right? But wait, there's more. So now they have this reconciliation package, and reconciliation means it's a budgetary process that only needs 50 votes or 51 to pass the Senate. It's not filibusterable, if that's a word. So, yeah, believe it or not, Chuck Schumer outmaneuvered Mitch McConnell and his band of merry Republican hucksters. So I kind of enjoy that. I think it's, we haven't seen the Democrats get strategic like this in a while. So that's a good thing. Listen to, John Kennedy, the gosh darn, you know, contra hick who really isn't one because he's an Oxford graduate. He doesn't really talk like this, but he does it, I guess, to appeal to his constituents in Louisiana. This is what John Kennedy said about it today.
But the timing of the Senator Manchin deal, I don't think was any accident.
What do you mean?
Well, the Democrats had some of my colleagues in the Senate agreed to support the 400 or 390 or 290, whatever it was.
I can't 280, count that high. But okay.
Subsidy
I can't
to big
count
tech,
that high.
Okay? And so they couldn't have passed that bill without Republican votes. So the Democrats, well, basically, they sucked my Republican votes up like a Hoover Deluxe and then got their votes and then, bam, announced this new tax increase.
Double cross.
I don't think there aren't very many coincidences here on Capitol Hill. I think that the timing was exquisite.
We looked
like a bunch of, well, I'm not going to say what
we Well, you
like.
Are. The timing was exquisite, and it's about time that the Democrats took hold of the situation and did something like this. So I applaud them. I think it's awesome. By the way, you know, there's so much more has happened. In fact, let me see if I can find this. As, you know, Democrats are rushing to get stuff done before they go on their August recess. Remember Joni Ernst? Of course you do. You remember this was her her big entree into national politics, her first campaign ad that got everyone's attention.
I'm Joni Ernst. I grew up castrating hogs on an Iowa farm. So when I get to Washington, I'll know how to cut pork.
So that's Joni Ernst, right? Well, this was Joni Ernst yesterday.
My life would be completely different without the Google Career Certificate.
This is a commercial. Sorry, I did a bad job editing. Okay. I'm waiting for the commercial to end to get to the clip. Come on. Here we go. Okay.
This definition also could include non-FDA approved drugs that would actually put a woman's health at risk.
Bullshit.
The bill also flies in the face of decades of work providing for conscious protections.
Bullshit.
It would require organizations to administer contraceptives despite their moral or religious beliefs.
Yeah? Well, tough shit. So that was Joni Ernst before she stood up and said no to a request for unanimous consent to pass the bill that the House passed, with 8 Republican votes, to codify a woman's right to birth control in the United States in the year 2022. Joni Ernst said, no, I do not approve. I will not consent to unanimous consent. And she torched the entire bill, killed it right there on the floor, just like she likes to castrate hogs. So one step up and 2 steps back. All right. Well, for the last couple of days or week, or so, you know, I've been sharing with you some of the candidates down here in Florida. Yesterday, we listened back to my interviews with the 2 gubernatorial candidates, well, the 2 Democrats vying in the primary to take on more on death sentence in November. It's Charlie Crist and Nikki Fried. And you might recall around the time when I aired those interviews originally back in September, there was a 3rd candidate. Annette Tadeo had jumped into the race. She came on the show. I've known Annette for many years. And actually, so has Howie Klein. And just in the last few weeks, Annette Tadeo dropped out of the gubernatorial race to run for Congress from the now 27th Congressional District of Florida. And let me tell you what's going on in Florida. Miami-Dade County, used to just be Dade County, but it's Miami-Dade County now, has been the Miami-Dade County Republican Party Executive Committee has been taken over by the Proud Boys. I'm not making this up. Don't believe anything I say. I hope you will, you know, when I say something and you find it curious, check it out. Use the Google machine. Use the DuckDuckGo. Use whatever search you feel comfortable with. But do your own research and you'll see the Miami-Dade County Republican Party Executive Committee has been taken over by the Proud Boys. Talk about extremists. And it's not only down here, it's happening around the country. Well, it's time that, Democrats and democracy take back control of Miami-Dade County. So Annette Tadeo now serves much of this district, Florida's 27th congressional district, as their state senator. She is in the state Senate representing that same area. So she has won there before. And now she's now running for Congress from that district. That's the district. I don't know how much you know about Florida politics, but it was represented by Ileana Ross-Lehtinen for a long, long time. She was a moderate Republican. And the district over time changed, and now it leans blue. And so she lost her seat, or she didn't run again. I'm trying to remember what it was. A Democrat won it. And then in the last election cycle, she was beaten. Debbie Mercassell Powell or something like that. And then in the last cycle, she was beaten by this Maria Salazar, a former Spanish language TV personality from Miami. Well, this woman is as maggot as they get. She's a nut job, and apparently she wasn't that bad when she was a TV personality, and she's just, taken it to a whole new level. So Annette Tadeo, I guess, decided to pull out of the gubernatorial race and run for that House seat. Now, Howie and I wanted to get Annette on together. And oh man, now I just lost the I lost the interview. I do have it here somewhere. Yeah, we wanted to have her on together, and why can't I find it now? And anyway, Howie's out for a couple of weeks, but I was able to sit down with Annette Tadeo yesterday and record an interview to talk about why she made this move and what her chances are, and what it comes down to really is the fact that this could be the seat that keeps control of the House for the Democrats. It's possible. All right. Now all I have to do is find where I put the interview. Oh, here it is. Okay. I think. Yeah. So with no further ado, I'm totally screwed this up. Annette Tadeo, hold on. I need to cue it in just a second or two, and hopefully we're ready to go right here. I guess. Take it away, Nicole and Annette.
Running for my seat, I'm in the 23rd district, and
we'll join it in
Ted
progress.
Deutch is not coming back, so I invited all six of the Democrats vying to, to get a good feeling of who I should vote for, and turns out five of them got back to me. Five of them came on the show. There's one holdout who's ignoring my calls, and he happens to be the front runner. So go figure. But anyway, you're not running in my district. You decided to run in Florida's 27th. Tell us about the district and why you decided to jump into this race.
Well, the district is the district where I've always lived. And actually, Nicole, you and I met when I ran for this seat, but way back, District 18 back then. So the numbers, of course, keep growing in Florida. So we have more seats. But this is what I call the Miami seat. This is the seat that has the entire city of Miami. It goes all the way from downtown where the Port of Miami is. So that's the northern point. And it goes all the way through Brickell. It does have parts of Liberty City. It has Little Havana, Brickell, Coral Gables, Key Biscayne, Pinecrest, Palmetto Bay, Cutler Bay, and now goes west to Kendall.
Wow.
So in the process of redrawing, and I think they were trying to make it less Democratic, they got rid of Miami Beach.
Oh, okay.
And they instead added Kendall. Now, please understand that I have now represented gotten elected twice in the Kendall Senate seat. Our Senate seats, for those that don't know, have about 650,000 constituents. influence. So they're about the size, pretty close to a congressional. So when they came further west, where Democrats tend to not do so well west of Miami-Dade, but I represent a seat that Trump carried by 6 points, won a special election. Big shocker to a lot of people. They weren't expecting that, especially when they spent $10 million in attacking me. And won re-election since. And so, that is the reason why so many people were so eager to get me in this race. But I will tell you, it wasn't all those people. It wasn't the DCCC. It wasn't all the Congress people calling. It wasn't all the promises. It was at the end of the day, actually, it was a conversation with my own daughter, who just turned 16.
Oh, wow.
She knew I was getting all these calls and everybody was really encouraging me. And I wanted to see what she thought. And she's the one that said, "Mom, you need to run. We need you in Washington." She just turned 16 and Roe v. Wade had not been announced, but it had been leaked. And so she just couldn't. One of the things she said is, "I can't believe that I'm going to have less rights than you." And then she started talking about birth control. And part of me was like, I don't think they'll go that far.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it was really her conversation with me about what had just happened in Uvalde. Mm. And she goes to public school. Her school, there's been 3 times already this year that she has stayed home because we've had a threat of a shooting at her school. So I fled terrorism in Colombia because my dad was kidnapped by the FARC, a terrorist group. I one day was shopping for uniforms. Another one was, I was in Alabama. And I just can't believe that my own daughter, our children, are growing up in what I call domestic terrorism, because that's what it is. And it's unacceptable. And she's the one that said, "We need you. Your voice is needed in Congress. And I would like for you to run." And it's really hard to not listen to your own daughter, who has been such an life.
And the stakes are so much higher now because of all the rights that have been taken away from us. And, you know, I always talk about opposite world, and they talk about, "Well, we got to keep Florida free." Yeah, don't elect Republicans if you want to keep Florida free. They skew everything sideways. So Annette Tadeo, you know, I can't believe your daughter's 16. Mine is now 23. So, you know, they grow up. It's like, as much as we try not to let them, they grow up. And the thing is, now they are confronted with issues that we thought were long settled.
Yes.
So it would be great to have you in Congress. So I tried to figure out which seat this was, but as you said, they've gone through so many redistricting. But is this the equivalent of the seat that Ileana Ross-Layton held?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. This is the seat that Ileana had, that Dante Fussell had, that Claude Pepper had. Mm. So it's been some pretty big people, and although obviously we disagree with depending on the party, it still were people that were respected, and that is not what we have in Maria Salazar right now. I mean, even on Fox News, they really make fun of her, or she can't take some of the tough questions, and that's not what we're used to in Miami. We're used to having high caliber people. Again, you may not agree with them on everything, but you at least know they're not going to embarrass you.
Right.
They know what they're doing. They're thinking about their decisions and how to represent best the district. It's a really important seat for not just for Miami, but for Florida. And frankly, the way that things are going, control of Congress may come down to the seat. This is
right.
The only flippable seat in the whole state of Florida. This is a +1 Democratic seat. And coming from a +6 Trump seat, believe me, I'll take +1. But really, it's going to be a seat that's going to be decided by MPAs. It's about a third.
MPAs, for those people, not no party affiliation, independents. Yeah.
Independents. Exactly. Where I tend to do really, really well. But one of the things, you just brought something that I want to make sure to talk to people about, and that is freedom. Because since I got in the race, the first thing that my opponent said, it was interesting. I was expecting socialists or communists or the typical thing.
Right, which is what they always do. Yeah.
Yes, I guess they learned their lesson because they haven't been able to beat me with those attacks. But what she did say is that I was going to have to defend the extremists in my party. So I say to that, you know what? If we want to talk about extremism in our parties, then I am so delighted. I am ready to have that fight. Why? Because this woman, Maria Salazar, actually has said that dogs voted in the election, that dead people voted in the election. She voted against the January 6th committee. Uh-huh. And she's constantly talking about freedom in Cuba, Venezuela, Nicaragua. And I'm like, you know what? If you want to stand up for freedom in those countries, I'm all with you. But you cannot be for democracy there and not stand up for democracy right here on our soil. January 6th was a wake-up moment for many of us who have come from other countries to see that something that's happening here that we never thought could happen on U.S. soil is happening. And it's happening because they're staying quiet, because they just want power. And I think democracy is before party, before everything, always should come first. And the Proud Boys are right now members of the Republican Executive Committee of Miami-Dade County.
They've taken over. And this is what people need to understand. The Proud Boys have taken control of the Republican Party of Miami-Dade County.
Absolutely. And by the way, Maria Salazar, when she got elected, she's automatically a member of the Republican Party Executive Committee of Miami-Dade. Uh-huh. And so as a member of the Executive Committee of Miami-Dade, I haven't heard a peep from her about the Proud Boys being a part of it, about all the hatred. Some of those Proud Boys that are members in Miami are under indictment for January 6th.
Right.
And yet she said nothing. So again, let's talk about freedom, but let's talk about freedom here before we can bring freedom to those countries in Latin America and the Caribbean.
Well, of course. And you know, you brought those up and you brought up the fact that, you know, they label Democrats as socialists, communists. They don't know the difference between the different isms. They call it, we're up to fascism. No, they just need to look in a mirror for that. But I think the last time we spoke, we talked about what's going on Spanish language radio in Miami-Dade County, where it seems like the Democrats just weren't monitoring it. And they're spreading all kinds of lies, disinformation, really bad stuff, and freaking out many of the Spanish-speaking people of South Florida because they were believing that stuff. Well, now comes word that one of the big owners, one of the big companies that has a bunch of radio stations broadcasting in Spanish in South Florida is being sold to a company that's headed by Democrats, and they're going to clean house. I understand that a lot of people who work at these stations are not very happy right now. Do you know anything about what's going on here?
Yes, I do. And by the way, it's not just Democrats. Some Republicans, or I would say never Trumper kind of Republicans. But interestingly enough, there are people, this includes Al Cardenas. Al Cardenas was the chairman of the Republican Party of Florida, the chairman nationwide of CPAC, a huge Jeb Bush and George W. Bush, all Bushes. So, I mean, these are not humongous liberals.
No,
they're not liberals at all. But They're pro-democracy, clearly, and never Trumpers, and I guess that bothers them too. But the fact is, you can't be telling people lies, spreading misinformation, and expect that that people are just going to continue to take up with this. I'm so glad that they've come up with the money and the resources to buy. But you know, it's interesting. They are also buying some of the other stations, so they don't say anything with when a conservative group is buying stations.
Right. No, of course not.
For example, the Colombian station was bought by a group of conservative investors, and they have totally turned that station into a conservative station when it wasn't. It was a middle of the road station before. And so they just get upset when it's not going to follow their kind of information. And what's really sad is the information just needs to be real. There's no reason to lie. You just need to give the information, give both sides, give middle of the road kind of information. But no.
Well, because as we know, the truth seems to have a liberal bias, because you speak the truth and that's what we do. And they accuse us of lying. So, you know, it's just frustrating. And apparently, again, I could listen to Spanish language radio and not know what they're saying, because my Spanish is limited to a few years at Hollywood Hills High School back many, many years ago. So my un poquito solamente Espanol. Yeah. So, yeah. So, yeah, I don't do well. And so I'd be not a great help in trying to monitor what goes on those stations. But somebody needs to, and it sounds like we're headed in the right direction. Is it going to be in time for the election?
I don't think so. I think some of them have, some of the people that were at the station have left. So a lot of their big radio people.
They're big names.
Left.
Okay, good. Yeah. So yes. The influence, they're not able to lie like they were, right? So the influence is tamped down a little bit, maybe.
Yes, but again, they're buying other stations and making sure that the audience moves there and stuff. So look, it is really wonderful from my perspective to see that we're going to have some balance. So people could switch stations and have a little bit more of a choice for different stations to listen to. But I'm running against somebody that was on Spanish media her whole life. And so she has very high name recognition, Maria Salazar. She's a TV personality. And frankly, when she was a TV personality, she was not this extreme right winger that she is now. And it's very interesting to see her real colors come forward. And but that's exactly what we're here to do, to show all of the incredible stuff that she has said, including lying to voters. She made a promise. For those of you who don't know, this was the Shalala,
Donna Shalala seat. Right.
Yeah. She's the one that lost. It is a 75% Hispanic seat. So it's one of the largest concentration of Hispanics in the country for a congressional seat. And it is again, very middle of the road kind of seat. And we don't need this person that is so
extreme. She's the extremist, right? So, Annette Tadeo, a couple of things. You were running in the governor's race. You decided to drop out. Do you have a choice? Now, you were Charlie Crist's running mate the last time he ran for governor. Do you have a preference between the two remaining candidates? We got Charlie Crist and Nikki Fried.
Yes, I do. And I chose Charlie. I don't think it's a surprise to many people.
Nope.
But definitely, you know, I know that it was, I will tell you, for me, it was a great experience and a difficult decision to make to pull out. But I was realizing that when you are a state senator, we have laws that don't allow us to raise money while we are in. So the entire, from January to March, I was not able to raise any money. And although we had raised over $1 million before then, my hands were tied. And then we had two separate special sessions after that. Yep. Every time there was a special session, I couldn't raise money.
And can I just say, there was a special session and they still haven't dealt with the insurance crisis in the state, right?
It was all pretend.
Oh, my God. This governor is just out of his mind. And the rest of the country is on drugs if they think that this guy is a suitable presidential candidate. So we'll get with that. We've got 2 years, thankfully, to deal with that after this. But the Sun Sentinel did a great editorial last week warning everybody Ron DeSantis is not the guy. Don't even think of it. He's worse than Trump. So
worse
than Trump. I know. I've been trying to tell people they got to listen. He's smarter. He understands how government works and still is trying to manipulate it to his fascist. And he's bad. Bad news. What's happening in the state is horrible, to the point where we're probably leaving. I'm probably moving away. But that's a story for another day. Annette did. The other thing is, Howie Klein wanted to be on the call with you. When I contacted you, Howie's like, let's get Annette on. You are progressive. You are endorsed by the Blue America Pack. Your website doesn't have your stance on the issues. And that's always a warning sign to me, because I find that the more conservative, as I call them, conservative Dems, often don't state their positions on issues because they don't want to say it. That's not the case with you.
No, I've always said it, but yes, I actually, we've only been in the race about 6 weeks, and I do have in my computer the final draft and need to approve so they can post them on the website, and we'll be updating more and more. But issues that are important to this district, frankly, affordability is obviously a big one, because 58% of Miamians' income is going towards house and transportation, and yet this woman voted against the infrastructure package. She voted against the transportation package. She votes against every single thing that matters to this district and that we need help with. But she also votes against codifying Roe v. Wade, votes against every issue.
How about our right to birth control?
Actually,
she voted for that?
For it.
Did she?
Said, wait, what happened? And she also voted for marriage equality. Ooh. So somehow the polling got back to her last week, because everything has changed. And it's amazing what a strong candidate makes people do. So here's what I have to say to people. I'm already representing you. I'm already getting her to vote the right way. And I haven't gotten elected yet, but we need to make sure to get me elected so that we can make sure that the votes continue to be the right votes and not just someone that all of a sudden changes when she sees that she's about to lose an election because she keeps voting against this district. She even voted against providing a broadband. And yet she criticizes Biden because he's not flying a balloon on top of Cuba so that we can provide more internet to Cuba. And yet the reason why Cubans have internet is because of Obama. Mm-hmm. The reason why we've been able to see all the things that happen in Cuba is because people have cell phones, because of the service that was brought by Obama. So, but I have this to say, before we talk about more internet access for Cubans in the island, can we make sure that our constituents right here have internet access?
Please.
And vote provide that internet access? Because I'm all for it. I'm all for it. But I want to make sure that we have it here.
Without a doubt. Now, you keep talking about her. Do you have to win a primary before you take her on? Are there other Democrats in the race?
There are. I have two other Democrats in the race. Nice guys. But at the end of the day, it is not much of a primary based on the information we have gathered. And frankly, again, it's the reason so many people have endorsed, and from unions to, you know, large groups to local groups, everyone, is because of the fact that we know that this seat is flippable with the right candidate.
Yes. Well, so but we need people to vote in the primary, which is August 23rd, and early voting is coming up soon, and the mail-in ballots have gone out apparently this week.
Yes. Everybody has them on their kitchen table. I have mine. And in just August 23rd is our primary. We need to make sure we have the strongest candidate that can go toe-to-toe, that has been already battle tested. Because, you know, again, nothing against my primary opponents, but it takes a lot to go through $10 million on TV, every commercial break calling you a communist, a terrorist, sympathizer, and a socialist, and all these things. When, you know, to be able to beat that, it really takes someone with a personal story that can push back, that can proudly say, guess what? What is wrong with people having health care? Guess what? What is wrong with people having a living wage? Guess what? What is wrong with my kid, you know, being able to go to school and not have to worry about getting killed? She should have to worry about her tests, what college she's going to go to. And by the way, you know, all of a sudden we're talking about whether a kid can talk about having two moms or two dads. How about the fact that what they're having to worry about is hiding under a desk because there's going to be a shooting? So these are the things that I push back on. And again, the freedom to travel to another state, to have a procedure that should be private, not the government's business. So I look forward to beating this woman, because it is going to be a very close race.
Yep.
And it's going to take a strong candidate to push back and win it.
Well, you're the perfect person for this seat, and I'd love to see you in Congress. It's about time, because you've been working towards it for a long time. I mean, we've known each other for a long time. So, Annette Tadeo, the website is AnnetteTadeo.com. You're on Twitter at Annette_Tadeo. I'll put links to all that on the blog when I post the show. I'm so happy you're in the race, and I feel good. I feel like, okay, there's hope in Miami, because, boy, things went real sour there a couple of years ago. So now it's time to turn it around. You know, the thing is to just remember what this Republican Party is doing. They installed this Supreme Court, and there, you know, 47 Republicans voted with all the Democrats on for same-sex marriage. That means like 157 voted against it. And for contraception, that was even a bigger margin. We need to stop them. And then they go and talk about how you need to keep your freedom, so you need to keep Republicans in office. That's what I call opposite world. No, everything they say, it's if you turn it around, then you might get some semblance of the truth. So, Annette Tadeo, reminding people to vote in the primary. It's so important. And then we move on to the general election. And hopefully, for the general, we'll have you back on, and Howie, you'll be back then, too.
Oh, yes, that would be great. It'd be great to see Howie. And I'm delighted to be on with you. And I will make sure that we send you the link as soon as we update the issues, because I've been bugging my team. But again, it's been like 6 weeks. So
gotcha.
Drinking out of a fire hose, because it's been a lot. But it's been wonderful, the response from the ground, the response from everyone. Heck, even some Republicans have been like reaching out and saying, we're all in.
Good.
We really don't like how extreme she is and how she's not representative. And again, they just want somebody that's just going to truly represent the district, truly be about delivering for our constituents and for our community.
Terrific. Annette, thank you so much. I know you're really busy. I appreciate you taking the time out. And we're here. I wish I could vote for you. I'm in the 23rd, not the 27th, but sending good thoughts and encouraging everyone to get out and vote. Thank you so much. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you. Thank you.
Annette Tadeo, everyone. By the way, her website is AnnetteTadeo.com, A-N-N-E-T-T-E. T-A-D-D-E-O, AnnetteTadeo.com. She's on Twitter at Annette_Tadeo, and I'll put links, of course, on the blog where I post today's show. She really is. She's great. And as you heard, I've known her for a long, long time. She has really been doing the work. She deserves to be in Congress, and frankly, we deserve to have her in Congress. But you know, towards the end of that interview, we talked about the extreme court. You know, the court formally called the Supreme Court, although they're not supreme any longer. So I ran across this comedy bit that I need to play for you, because it's perfect. And it's done by, God, what is the name? They're called Juice Media, the Juice Media, I believe. And they're actually based in Australia. And if you've been listening or watching the show for any amount of time, you've known I played these, their bits, their good government advertisements from Australia that are just so perfect. Well, finally, the Juice Media turned their good government advertising towards the United States. And boy, is this important. So listen up. It's an important public service announcement. Here we go.
Hello, I'm from the U.S. government. No, not that. Or that. Your actual government. The Supreme Court. You know, the guys who brought you voter suppression. Citizens United. And this global terrorist.
SCOTUS.
Even at the best of times, SCOTUS gives zero f**ks about democracy. We answer to nobody. We overrule laws made by Congress. Our justices are appointed for life. And you don't even elect us. To be fair, you barely elect the people who do appoint us. But here we are. And now that we finally have enough Federalist Society nutjobs on the bench, we'll be using this court's unchecked power to wrong some rights. Like the right for women to have no control over their own bodies. The right for kids to be indoctrinated at school. The next mass shooter's right to flaunt their weapon in public. And the right for polluters to kill even more of you in heat waves, floods, and fires. But we're only just getting started. In our next term, we'll decide if Republicans have the right to steal the next presidential election. That's right, we'll be ruling on the theory of independent state legislature. Independent state legislature is a judicial fart cooked up by these three bandits who helped steal the 2000 election in what's widely regarded as one of our shittest rulings ever. The theory proposes that during presidential elections, state legislatures have the power to ignore your votes and choose their own electors, which is handy if none of your favorite presidents have won the popular vote this century. And if state courts try to stop this shitfuckery by upholding their constitutions, the theory says SCOTUS should step in to decide the outcome of the election. Yep, just like what happened in 2000. History was almost repeated at the last election when Il Duce asked us to use this very theory to invalidate your mail-in ballots in a bunch of swing states. Unfortunately, we didn't quite have the numbers to help him out back then. But now, we do.
Trump 24.
Brought to you by SCOTUS. Legal experts say it would be hypocritical of us to embrace a law with no constitutional basis after striking down this law for having no constitutional basis. But they overlook a key aspect of our jurisprudence. We don't give a shit. We're just here to impose our fucked up ideology.
Lick our SCOTUS.
What's that? How can you stop us? Well, introducing more justices and term limits would be a start, but that would require an actual majority in both the House and Senate. Better vote in those midterms. Might be the last free election you get. Oh. Failing that, you'll have to find a way to show us you're not going to stand for six unelected pieces of shit rat-fucking your democracy anymore. You know, general strikes, mass protests, all good things we've been working hard to outlaw. Until then, enjoy the ride as we take you back to 1787. Or whatever this frat boy imagines that to be. Probably a cross between Handmaid's Tale and Beerfest. Whatever. Fuck you.
SCOTUS.
Authorized by the Department for Thinly Disguised Plans to Usher in a Theocratic Christian Regime.
Wow. All right.
Welcome to Season 3 of the Honest Government Ads. And thank you to all our patrons for supporting our work, especially our patron producers. If you'd like to help us keep the bastards honest, you can do so at patreon.com/thejuicemedia.
The Juice Media. So they do those Honest Government ads from Australia. And I've been playing them for the better part of a couple of years. And as far as I know, this is the first time they've ever taken on the U.S. they did us proud. Yes, they did. So the Juice Media. There you go. Brilliant. Brilliant. And she even did a decent American accent, considering they're all Australian. All right, we've reached the end of the hour. There's something I don't do enough, which is tell you that this program is a public service from me. It's not behind any paywall. It's free for you to listen to, but I do subsist. I do make a living, or try to anyway, from your support. Your donations is what pays my salary. So if you enjoy the show, and you can afford it, please make a one-time donation or a recurring donation. You can do it at NicoleSandler.com. Just click on one of the donate buttons. There are a number of them. Or, you know, if you want, let me do some artwork for you. Here's a little video playing in the background of some of the paintings I've done. I do pet portraits and other things as well. So if you have a pet you would like immortalized in a painting, email me, Nicole@NicoleSandler.com, or go to paintyourpets.net and you can see more of my work there. In addition to the pet portraits, I'm doing faux stained glass artwork and fun with boxes and all kinds of things. So anything you want, I'm happy to create art for your donations. Anyway, thank you for listening, everybody. Tomorrow, we'll wrap up the week with an old friend of mine named John Ondrasik. He is a recording artist with the band Five for Fighting. Actually, he is the band Five for Fighting. And he has a new song out written to benefit the people of Ukraine. And we'll talk about it with John Ondrasik tomorrow on the show. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'll be back here tomorrow. As usual, it's a Friday, so we'll wrap things up. All right, I will leave you with the news. And for now, I'll just let the video of my artwork keep playing in the background while you listen to today's news. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
We begin today with some encouraging news. Senator Joe Manchin, still in COVID quarantine, and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer announced Wednesday afternoon that they had reached a deal on a new reconciliation package dealing with health care and climate, resurrecting part of Biden's agenda that we thought had been killed by Manchin and Sinema a few times. So it seems that just about everyone was caught by surprise when they released the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022. It's a 700-plus page bill. It includes nearly $370 billion in climate and energy provisions, including funding for new hydrogen, nuclear, renewable, and fossil fuel programs, lowers energy costs, increases cleaner production, and reduces carbon emissions by roughly 40% by 2030. This bill allows Medicare to negotiate drug prices and caps out-of-pocket costs at $2,000. It also, very importantly, extends the premium subsidies under the Affordable Care Act for 3 years. In terms of taxes, it's finally making the biggest corporations and the ultra-wealthy pay their fair share with a corporate alternative minimum tax. This is for companies with more than $1 billion in annual profit. No new taxes on families making $400,000 or less, and no new taxes on small businesses. They say this bill closes tax loopholes and enforces the tax code. And the package includes more than $300 billion to go towards the Manchin priority of deficit reduction. As of press time, still no word from Kyrsten Sinema's office as to whether or not she will support this deal. Fingers crossed. And stay tuned. Now, whether it was some surprising strategery, so to speak, or just a coincidence, the timing of this announcement was remarkable. Just hours earlier, 17 Senate Republicans voted with the Democrats to help pass the $280 billion CHIPS Plus bill, which will bolster the domestic chip manufacturing industry and fund scientific research. I mean, good stuff for the American people, right? Well, now Mitch McConnell's angry. So how they responded to this surprise announcement is by filibustering the bill to help veterans exposed to toxic pit burns while in the military. That's how Republicans respond to being outmaneuvered politically? By hurting veterans? That's shameful. But wait, there's more. The CHIPS bill that I just told you about, that 17 Senate Republicans voted for, that now goes to the House? Well, Republican leadership is now urging its members to vote against the CHIPS bill. So something they voted overwhelmingly for yesterday to help people, they're now trying to derail. Nancy Pelosi only has four votes to play with, and she loses one on August 9th due to a special election in Minnesota. So she wants to get this vote done and to President Biden for his signature. Well, as feared and somewhat expected, the U.S. economy shrank again for a second straight quarter at an annual rate of 0.9%. A move like that usually signals a recession. And this news comes just a day after the Federal Reserve announced that it would raise interest rates by 0.75 percentage point for the second straight month. Fed Chair Jerome Powell saying they're going to keep being aggressive in fighting inflation.
Today's increase in the target range is the second 75 basis point increase in as many meetings. While another unusually large increase could be appropriate at our next meeting, that is a decision that will depend on the data we get between now and then. We will continue to make our decisions meeting by meeting and communicate our thinking as clearly as possible.
Congress is racing against the clock trying to get some other priorities taken care of before the August recess. The House Democratic Caucus and a whopping 8 Republicans voted last week to protect the right to birth control and other contraceptives. That bill went to the Senate, but it was blocked today by Joni Ernst. Remember her?
I'm Joni Ernst. I grew up castrating hogs on an Iowa farm. So when I get to Washington, I'll know how to cut pork.
Yeah, that Joni Ernst of Iowa. She objected to the request for unanimous consent to pass the bill, killing it on the floor. So Joni Ernst says no birth control for you?
Washington's full of big spenders. Let's make them squeal.
Why are Republicans so vindictive? Rhetorical question. President Biden has completed his 5-day isolation and tested negative for COVID-19 twice, so he is cleared to resume normal activities, his doctor said. Biden will wear a mask when near others for 10 days in compliance with the CDC. And the doctors credit his quick recovery and mild symptoms to his vaccination, 2 booster shots, and a 5-day course of the antiviral medication Paxlovid. And again, we warn, COVID isn't over. In fact, this latest strain is the most contagious one yet. Take precautions. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.